This is News in Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, the Surgeon General says an expanding waistline is more hazardous to our health than terrorists. And can a big surprise win at the Oscars help race relations? Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our New York Bureau, John McWhorter, Manhattan Institute Senior Fellow in Public Policy. From WGBH in Boston, Callie Crossley, social and cultural commentator on the television program Beat the Press. And from Maryland, George Curry, Editor-in-Chief of the National Newspaper Publishers Association News Service. All right, folks, everybody talking about the Oscars this morning. Let me first say, full disclosure, I was on a plane last night and did not see the Academy's big night. But one big surprise came. Jack Nicholson announced it. Let's listen.
And the Oscar goes to Crash.
That was the big surprise last night. Many people thought it was a foregone conclusion that Brokeback Mountain was going to win. We're not necessarily talking so much about Crash winning as much as we are, Callie Crossley, the idea that this should, if nothing else, get America talking about, as the movie did so interestingly, race relations in this country. Do you think this win can at least, among colleagues at work or over lunch table or dinner tables, get America talking?
I would hope so. However, you know, you got to go see it. And I think that even though that it won the big award, I think you'll get a little bit of a blip of people going to see it. But I think it's tough stuff for most people. And one of the reasons why it's been kind of a cult favorite and one of those word of mouth art pieces is that a lot of people know what the subject is and they just don't care to see it on the big screen. So if, in fact, if people saw it, I think it is a way to begin conversations because a lot of things are laid out quite blatantly. But one of the ongoing problems in America is the lack of the essential conversation about race. So I'm all for anything that might stimulate conversations about it in any way.
It is very in your face. It runs the gamut from black to white to other minorities, and many stories interwoven. Let's take a listen to Lorenz Tate and Ludacris from a portion of the movie.
You couldn't find a whiter, safer, or better lit part of this city right now. But yet this white woman sees two black guys who look like UCLA students strolling down the sidewalk, and her reaction is blind fear? I mean, look at us, dog. Are we dressed like gangbangers? Huh? No. Do we look threatening? No. Fact, if anybody should be scared around here, it's us. We're the only two black faces surrounded by a sea of over-caffeinated white people patrolled by the trigger-happy LAPD. So you tell me, why aren't we scared?
Just a thought from Ludacris there as they walk the streets, albeit for the fact that they were looking for trouble that night. But it is a very complex movie, and it juxtaposes many of the things that we deal with, John McWhorter, on a day-to-day basis as relates to race. Any hope, thought that this, again, might spur people to be honest and not have the homogenized version in mixed company of what they think about race?
It is vastly unclear to me that there is no conversation about race in this country as late as 2006. I think the question is, what kind of conversation are some of us waiting for? And if we're waiting for a conversation where black America gets white America to admit that racism is still the defining scourge of our lives and that nothing will happen for black America until white America realizes something, then I think that that conversation is never going to happen. We've been having a conversation about race since Katrina. We have a conversation about race when Bill Cosby says something. People publish books about these things. There is a conversation. It's just not the conversation that I think we've often been taught to expect. And for the record, I think that the kind of conversation that Crash encourages, which gives us all a way of kind of medicating ourselves by pretending that that life that's depicted of Terrence Howard is anything typical of any black person in this country, is a dangerous thing. Crash is a mesmerizing and well-made piece of work, but it's also a hideous distortion. And to the extent that is going to get around on DVD and it's already being used in discussion groups and Oprah has done it. It depicts a kind of race relations which is a heightened refraction, but it won't get us anywhere in talking about life as it really is, which isn't perfect, but it's nothing like that very troubling movie.
All right, George Curran, for people who haven't seen it, forgive me, George, and I'll let you pick up on your point. Mm-hmm. Terrence Howard plays an upwardly mobile middle-class African-American who doesn't want a lot of trouble, just wants to be able to live his life. Some will say kind of shuns his blackness and tries to homogenize himself. But there are other portrayals, obviously, in the vast array of African-Americans on economic and social climates here in the United States that are portrayed in this movie. Go ahead.
I think the fact that we're talking about the one and two movies here, Brokeback and Crash, both indicate some progress. But to the extent that it's going to translate into some substantive discussion and some change in behavior, I too doubt that that'll happen when you consider we've already had these watershed events, Bill Clinton's special commission, and Jimmy Carter want to do something about race, and even comments from George Bush, but nothing that's really substantive has happened, and I don't think it'll happen because, as a result of this movie.
But Kelly, I have found often that this kind of pop culture discussion often moves us further than the political social discussions because people feel a little bit more comfortable. I'm not in any way suggesting it's going to happen, that this is going to be the panacea. But often when it starts here with a movie or a song or a television show, people are more apt to bring it up and talk about it in social gatherings than they will if, in fact, the president discusses it in the State of the Union, etc.
Well, that's absolutely true. So that you do have some possibility of having some conversation about it. I need to just go back to what John said. People are throwing words out there that have race in the sentence, but I'm talking about having real conversations.
White America is never going to get on its knees.
Well, wait a minute. I didn't ask. Why? That's not what I said. You interpreted a conversation about race about meaning that I'm suggesting that white America needs to be on its knees. That's not what I'm saying. And what I tell college students all the time is I have some very good white friends. Now, what does that mean? We've had some real, real tough conversations, which I'm not ceding some ground around some racial issues for me, and neither are they. But it takes you to a different place. That's an essential conversation as opposed to sort of this fluffy stuff on top where we all say, yeah, boy, that was a racist cop. That's really bad. And I would never do that. I'm talking about ordinary folks having conversations. So it is good if anything is inspired to begin a conversation like that from a pop culture piece of work like Crash. I say fine. And by the way, I think there's plenty of Terrence Howards out here in terms of the character that he played. I don't know where you all vacation. I'm on Martha's Vineyard. I'm looking at him every summer. So, hello.
That is not my life, and it's not the life of any of the, I can think of eight black men I know well, where that has nothing to do with what their life is.
Well, that's very
really
good from an anecdotal standpoint, and
well,
I know I'm doing
giving
the same
an anecdote
thing.
I just said that,
but I'm saying to you that, I mean, I believe that there is more
and
out there
are.
Than you
I think it's a fair depiction of the growing status, even though some would argue it's starting to stagnate now. There has been certainly a growing status of African Americans who have broken a certain economic and social barrier.
And I do not get beat up by police every time I'm in a sweatsuit walking down a street in a city.
Nobody's suggesting that. We're talking about, it's just saying, on the law of averages, I'm not asking white America to stay on his knees. I'm not suggesting black Americans every time they step out the door, somebody's beating them on the head or being pulled over. What I'm saying is, and this is back to Ed's point, is this a way to begin a conversation? I say yes, though I believe that most people still want to shy away from really talking about the issues. Has nothing to do with trying to browbeat white America, John. This is about a real conversation.
Hey, George, let me ask you this in relation to the other surprise possibly that we saw last night, and that is It's Hard Out There for a Pimp did, in fact, win Best Song from the Academy. And as I watched the replays, and this is not a knock against 3-6 Mafia, they seemed genuinely excited to win. But it seemed to me almost with a wink and a nod that some of the interviewers who talked about it today, some of the news people, and certainly the reaction of the crowd last night might be that kind of underlying uneasy racist thought that America often has of, isn't that cute? We let them win for this, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, it's just I think part of it is this fascination with this pimp world that a lot of people don't know about. Another part is it's just plain old stereotypes. We talked about this Friday. This is what gets rewarded. Junk mm-hmm. like this, when there's a lot more out there, more substantive, more realistic, but it's just typical, stereotypical stuff, and I take no glee in the fact that it won.
Me either. I'm frankly mortified. But look, no offense. I'm glad for 3-6 Mafia. They get one their little dream. But all I thought about was, here's a worldwide audience, and this is the song that is named the best Oscar song. And I'm thinking about Diane Reeves' fabulous performance in Good Night and Good Luck, and that didn't get a nomination.
Well, you know, you can turn it on its head, actually, because that song, you know, it's catchy and disgusting, as many songs like that are. It's actually about black poverty and oppression and what one has to do to get over. And to the extent that songs like that become mainstream hits, couldn't we see that as part of this conversation that we're waiting for, that now the typical white teenager
and that's true, John, and
is
I think
more aware?
As we move on, I think you're right there. But I think the important part is the idea that there was nothing wrong with Good Times being on television if it weren't the only depiction of African Americans that was on television at the time or saluted. And so what you want to be able to, and not 10 and 15 years apart, is to have Good
mixture.
Times on as well as the Cosby Show
the Jeffersons was on at the same time.
So to your point, Callie, you know, you'd like to see a wonderful performance like Diane Reeves. And it's hard out there for a pimp. Nothing wrong, quite frankly, with
exactly.
either of those, because they do depict the full range of who and what we are, not just of African Americans, but people in general. But you want to have that full depiction.
But
you're
going to have
the
full depiction. You can't give them equal standing. You got to have a pimp with like less than 1%.
Well, I mean, we know that's the case. But the point is, you want to have them both, you know, on equal ground. All right. Surgeon General last week said obesity is the terror within, that obesity rates have tripled over the last 40 years for children and teenagers. And he suggests if we don't, in fact, tackle this problem, his concern is, where will all of our soldiers and sailors and airmen come from, our police officers and firemen? Because he's afraid that youngsters today will suffer through hypertension, cardiovascular disease, increased cancers, and all of those things, John McWhorter. He says, in his opinion, this can be the true problem. An issue perhaps even bigger than foreign terrorism.
Well, I think that he's kind of pushing the envelope to make an important point, which is that there is an obesity epidemic. I don't know if it's as dangerous as some of the things that might happen to us from other parts of the world. But the fact is that these dietary problems are getting bad enough that we're seeing children with diabetes, and there is a color skew to this as well. And so we do need to look at it, because people's eating habits get set very early. I, at this point, have a hard time not eating a lot of grease myself, based on the black diet I was brought up on, and luckily I'm genetically not predisposed to get large because of it. But yeah, this is a problem, and if he has to throw that kind of bomb, so to speak, then let's see what happens.
I think it's wrong to do it. I think it's wrong to overemphasize. Everybody's using terrorism. You know, you got to go to the bathroom, you call it terrorism. You know, it just, I think it's inappropriate use of the word. And you got to look at a lot of things. Yes, the diet, but you also got to look at what we are not requiring physical education classes anymore in schools and a whole range of things. But just to taint everything out there with the terrorism label, I think is a mistake and really kind of this does a disservice to the real problem of terrorism.
Callie, on the other hand, one can argue that, in fact, particularly when you hear terror today, people's ears perk up and they kind of listen. The Surgeon General went on to say, this is a quote, unless we do something about it, the magnitude of the dilemma will dwarf 9/11 or any other terrorist attempt. And in a grand scale, not suggesting that one can supersede another in importance, but the juxtaposition of the two, one can argue that this may in fact dwarf it.
Well, I think a couple things. Yes, he did it to be attention getting, but also what you want to do is raise the flag and signal well before the epidemic is worse off than it is at this point, and it's pretty bad. I think I could have appreciated his comments more if he tied them to public policy, which is making it easier for poor people to get bad food because bad food is cheap and available, whereas good food is more expensive and harder to get.
So on the other hand, a little anecdote is that in New York City, there is a Fairway supermarket with wonderful produce at moderate prices right near a disadvantaged neighborhood, and people still have the same sorts of problems. So it's not always whether or not there's a supermarket and whether the government has put it there. They're also just entrenched cultural patterns. If that kind of diet is based on the sort of food that we were given as slaves, that's true. But still, it just means that things are passed on from generation to generation. So it's partly society, but partly culture.
John, they're absolutely passed on. I am not narrowly defining this. I'm also saying that given this, even that's an anecdotal suggestion, there can be a fairway right there in the neighborhood, but those kids also go to school. They're also out, or, and for that matter, the population is out and about. And I'm just saying, every place else, despite the fairway in the neighborhood for the moment, bad food is available. And there, let's talk about another policy issue having to do with all of these parents working crazy hours because of low wages. We can go back to minimum wage and bring it all back home because they've got to try to, you know, feed these kids. And the way they get these kids fed is with bad food because it's cheap and available.
Callie, good do you food, actually think traditional, that there will ever not be bad
think.
Food around?
Or no, that the parents of course won't not. Be working I hard? I did not say that. I am saying to you that all of this stuff has come together at a point that some people are alarmed to the making a suggestion and comparing it to terrorism. But it's alarming and at a rate that we need to pay attention to before it gets worse. An earlier report in the news said that the childhood obesity rate is going up 28%. I mean, that is huge. And that's something we have to pay attention to now, because not only does it have to do with whether or not we'll have firefighters or the rest, we'll all be dead. You know, nobody can
sustain
this. George
Curry, with less than a minute left, here's the reality. We've been hearing about the idea of obesity, particularly in the black community, for some time. People are going to have to take it upon themselves, whether the Surgeon General tells you something or whether former President Bill Clinton talks about it, to eat better and to really reduce calorie intake to a great degree, period.
Fat chance, Ed, so to speak. I mean, look, it is a reality, particularly when you look at the disparities. Of the 15 leading causes of death, African Americans are disproportionately represented in 13 of those areas. And I think the lesson here is some of these things are preventable, and that's why we got to really be more assertive and step it up and actually pay attention to our diet, exercise, and everything else.
All right, George Curry, Kelly Crossley, John McWhorter, as always, we thank you for being a part of what was today a very spirited roundtable. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.